What if there was no National Day of Prayer? What if we forgot the God of our fathers? What if nobody cared? In 1963, prayer was removed from public schools. In 2005, the Supreme Court ordered the Ten Commandments removed from the walls of two Kentucky courthouses. And now, there's an effort to remove the National Day of Prayer. But this is even bigger than the National Day of Prayer. This is about remaining true to our spiritual heritage. Throughout America's history, every generation has had a responsibility to carry our nation in prayer. Will ours be the generation that fails? Get involved. Let's not be the generation that let the National Day of Prayer slip away. For more information, log on to nationaldayofprayer.org. nationaldayofprayer.org.
Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson here with Luann Crane. And Dad and Luann, it is a shocking and really a disheartening fact that over half the abortions performed in America are on women less than 25 years of age.
Well, that is very sad, Ryan. And it is also unfortunate that often young women particularly, think of abortion as their only option. Mm-hmm.
Well, Doctor, what's even worse is that this culture, from the media to the courts to the president himself, are all telling them that that is the right thing to do.
Well, I wish the president and the culture would tell women that the largest source of mass murder and genocide in human history is abortion. Mm. And that is unbelievable when you think about it, because the Holocaust took somewhere between 6 and 7 million lives, but abortion has taken right at 50 million now since 1973. Mm. So we talk about it often because we must. It's a leading from the Lord, I think, and we will do that as long as we have breath within our bodies. 1.1 million U.S. abortions take place every single year. I think it used to be about 1.5, and now it's 1.1. That's still terrible.
That's still too
and
much.
Family Talk wants to come alongside young women who are facing times like these, and we want to let them know that they do have other options,
right,
and there is hope for them. And there are many organizations and resources out there that offer help. And we've invited a young activist to be with us today. I don't know if she'd call herself a young activist, but that's what I call her, because she is doing so much to educate women, including young women in college campuses, about the real meaning of abortion and the quality and sanctity of life. And it is so good to have her here. She's kind of a hero to us. Her name is Kristen Hawkins, and she has a lot to tell us today. We applaud what you're doing,
yes,
Kristen,
mm-hmm,
and we're so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me on. It's really a privilege to be here with you all today.
You really do care about the unborn child, don't you?
Yeah, that's our mission. We want to end abortion in America, and we know that the most effective way for us to do this as a movement is really to go to the heart of where abortions are happening, and it's young women on college campuses.
And you have two children of your own.
Yes, I do.
What are their ages?
Gunner, who just turned 3, and Bear, who's going to be 2 in a few weeks.
And she really said Bear.
Yeah,
Doctor.
I wish my folks had named me Bear. How did you get into the struggle to preserve unborn life?
Sure. Well, first I have to say, I grew up in a non-denominational church. So my first kind of exposure to abortion and life issues was by you, Dr. Dobson, with the church bulletin inserts that Focus on the Family had provided. And, a lot of, we know today, evangelical churches, it's hard sometimes to talk about abortion. And so I would read
That's sad, too, isn't it?
It's very, very sad. And it's a very sad trend that's been developing. And so, I remember reading.
But before you leave that, that idea, isn't it interesting that we're winning the battle in the wider world,
yes,
the wider culture, mm-hmm, and the churches tend to be moving away from it?
Yeah, no, I do agree. It's a problem we're having. You know, we do a lot of work with students, and we talk about abortion as a human rights issue. It's mm-hmm, it's very appealing to students when we're talking about what was the Holocaust? What was slavery? What did that mean? People were property. They were not human beings with mm-hmm, rights. And it's the same issue we have with abortion today, that the preborn do not have rights afforded to them by our government. And so that's what's really been really effective when we're talking with students, and that's what makes a lot of sense to them. No matter where they may stand, on if they've gone to church or haven't gone to church in a while, they all can agree that abortion is a human rights mm-hmm issue.
Mm-hmm. So when you sit down to talk about this subject mm-hmm with college girls, we will say.
Sure.
Do they get mad at you? Do they accept what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Do they argue with you? Well, what? I'm sure you get all those reactions, but what's typical?
Typical for us, and this is good news for the movement, is that many of the people we speak with are pro-life. They understand that abortion is taking a human life. Mm. You can see this in any of the national polls that have been coming out. This is the first generation, youth generation, mm-hmm, since the handing down of Roe and Doe that's actually pro-life. Mm. Normally, young people are more liberal on abortion, and as they get older, have a family, they become more conservative. And this is a trend that's scaring the abortion industry because they know it's been developing. What we face on the campuses isn't really, they acknowledge that abortion is killing something, that they don't like abortion. I can get the majority of people to say, oh, I would never, ever have an abortion. It's moving them from that statement to action of mm-hmm saying, well, would you vote against abortion? Mm-hmm. Would you join a group and tell your friends you're against abortion? And that's really a result of the culture, though, because we've been raised in a, well, your values aren't your neighbor's values, and you're mm-hmm not supposed to impose your values on your neighbor. Moral relativism, and that's how we've been raised. So that's really our biggest challenge that we face on the campuses. Not that the kids aren't pro-life. It's that they say, well, I don't have the right to tell another woman what she can and cannot do with her body.
Hmm. Hmm. But they do recognize that it's wrong.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It very rarely will I find someone on a campus who says, yay, abortion, or I've proudly had two abortions, or yeah, I drove my girlfriend to the abortion facility. People don't say that. Mm-hmm. And everyone will say, oh, I'm against abortion. And I know the women that I'm talking to. Chances are there's a 50% chance that even though she's saying she's against abortion, she's probably already had an abortion in her mm-hmm lifetime. So it's a really interesting development. And you can trace it back to, you know, technology. Technology has played a very big role in this generation with the development of the ultrasound. And,
yeah,
you know, I remember a few years ago when I was in high school, the GE 3D and 4D ultrasound had just first come out, and they were running mainstream TV ads talking about their new ultrasound machine. What a pro-life ad that was. It wasn't intended to be a pro-life ad, but here they are broadcasting to the entire world that it's not a blob of tissue inside of that mother. It's a baby who's sucking his thumb.
Hmm.
And so that was, I think, really significant for the development of this generation.
But you actually began working in the pro-life movement at the age of 15?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was a part of a summer plan where I had to volunteer 100 hours to graduate my high school with honors. Being the dork that I was, I had to, get all A's and be in the honors program. So I was looking for...
Hey, come on now. That's not a dork.
Oh, yeah.
My son just joined the chess club, so dorks run well.
Yeah, I always joke, I had just won a scholarship to Space Academy. So my plan was to graduate high school early to go into aeronautical engineering because I wanted to work for NASA. And so I had been giving presentations at my church and other churches of my week at NASA Space Camp and my Space Camp suit. I'm a big dork.
Had you seen the movie Space Camp, though?
No, but I watched it before I went to Space Camp.
Of course.
My boyfriend, and then my husband at the time, or my husband now, brought over the movie and said, you need to watch this before you go to Space Camp. So I was really into aeronautical engineering. This is what I wanted to do. My dad was trying to convince me to come out to Colorado Springs and you should join the Air Force Academy. And then a woman in my church said, I'm working at this women's center. I'm their accountant. Would you like to come and be my intern? And I really didn't, I don't think, fully process what it was. I just, I'm pro-woman. Sure, I'll be your volunteer. And so I walked in, and the women at the center were so excited that I was there. they said, we need you. Because the majority of women coming in for the pregnancy screenings were my age.
And you were 15.
I was 15. Wow. So it was a crisis pregnancy center. I always joke that my mom never really had that birds and bees talk with me. So I learned a lot that week about STDs and, all of these things, because I had to learn everything I could to go into the rooms with the women, administer the pregnancy test, talk to them about where they were in their lives, talk to them about abortion. And so it was really an eye-opening couple of weeks for me. And I really fell in love with meeting the women, talking with them, and just really seeing the broken relationships that they had in their lives and what led them to coming into the crisis pregnancy center's doors. And I just fell in love with the pro-life movement. I remember I watched my first day Dr. Bernard Nathanson's Silent Scream video. Mm-hmm. And then I popped in a video, and I don't remember the name, is Father Frank Pavone holding an aborted baby who had been born through saline abortion. Yeah. And just then, my whole life and where I wanted to be and where I thought God's plan for my life was changed.
That
instantly.
Was an epiphany you, wasn't
it? It was. Mm.
And they had you counseling women right from the get-go.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. It's really just skipping the frying pan altogether. Yeah. It's just walking in the door, jumping in the fire.
Yeah, and I really credit the Crisis Pregnancy Center, because I talk a lot with Crisis Pregnancy Center's directors, and we work with college students, and they all one of the biggest complaints I hear is they don't really want us. They just want us to come mow their grass and organize the diapers. And I always ask Crisis Pregnancy Center directors and other leaders of pro-life groups, give the students something tangible to do, because they'll take it and they'll run with it. And that's what made all the difference in my life. They didn't just stick me in the back room. Now, I reorganized the entire, all the diapers and baby formula we got, and I enjoyed that. I created a little database, being the dork I was, of how much we had. And
now you got to stop that.
But it was really a great experience for me, because it gave me hands-on experience to know exactly what was going on and really be able to meet women who I would have never met, in my little white Christian town of Wellsburg.
Yeah, Kristen, I should have said early on, and I got interested in talking to you and didn't do it, but you're the executive director of Students for Life in America. Mm-hmm. And there were 181 chapters, and now it's over 700. Mm-hmm. And you and your team have largely done that, haven't you?
In the past 5.5 years.
How? I mean, that's really radically increasing the number. And you hear adults saying, kids today, they're apathetic, and they don't really want to get involved. They don't want to do anything polarizing. They don't want to do anything that's uncomfortable. And you're just rapidly growing an organization that does all those things.
Yeah, if you look at Planned Parenthood, they boast that they have 200 campus chapters. And I can proudly say that at least half of those aren't really in existence. It's one professor in the Women's Studies Department who heads up the Planned Parenthood chapter. No, it speaks to, our commitment of taking an aggressive campaign-style approach of going onto the campuses with jeans, T-shirts, looking like a student, having a clipboard, asking people, hey, how do you feel about abortion? Are you pro-life? Are you pro-choice? And just, getting right down in there and getting people signed up. Hey, I want to meet with you. I want to help you start a pro-life group. And that's really what's led to a lot of the growth. As media started to pick up a little bit about what we're doing, and we've very, very active on social media because we don't have a lot of money. So social media is the best way for us to get our message out. So we get a lot of referrals of, hey, my friend started a group. Can I start a group in my school now? Or my mom heard you on the radio. Can I start a group? And so we're getting a lot of referrals that come in as well.
That's fantastic.
All right, you show up on a campus. What do you do? I mean, you start talking to people. You told us that. Then what?
There's a couple different steps. First, we'll go to Facebook, and we'll find out, this is a target school. So we're going to look to see, do they have a Christian group? Do they have a Catholic group on campus? Do they have a Republican group? And we're going to look for groups that might be like-minded in pro-life issues. And we'll reach out to students saying, hey, I'm coming to campus next week. Love to take you out for coffee to talk to you about our mission at Students for Life. Sometimes we get people respond. Sometimes we don't. Then we'll go to campus. us with a clipboard or an iPad. We got a little more tech savvy. And we ask students, hey, are you pro-life? Will you sign up? So I'll go and stand in front of the cafeteria, lunch and dinner time, when everyone's coming in to get fed. And you're just asking. And you're not standing behind a table. We don't have a display. It's just a clipboard. The campus police don't even know you're there half the time. So we get the students signed up. Then we follow up with them and say, hey, we're going to have a meeting next week. We're going to offer free pizza. We'd love to talk to you about ending abortion on your campus. And then we go and have a meeting with them and say, these are the things that you can do on your campus to make an impact in the abortion fight. These are the resources you can provide to women on your campus who might be facing an unplanned crisis pregnancy.
Are these Christian universities for the most part?
Mm-hmm. No, they're not. We have a much easier time on secular universities, to be honest with you.
Oh, wow. Come on.
Yes.
Kristen, you have to be kidding.
No, no. I knew this was going to come up in the interview. Secular schools are much easier for us to organize on because, one, they're public universities. So the university administration cannot kick off our Students for Life group or tell our Students for Life group that their group isn't broad enough in issues. Like, we just had a Christian school in Minnesota tell our new group there that they can't be an official group on campus because they're not broad enough. They only talk about abortion and life issues.
What?
Mm. Yeah. Christian schools are the hardest schools for us to organize.
Let me tell you guys something else, and you will know this, Kristen. One of the saddest things is that on Christian college campuses, especially evangelical schools that are trying to support a righteousness and a Christian way of life, when a young woman, a student, gets pregnant, she is often asked to leave. But if she disappears and comes back not pregnant because she's been to see an abortionist, she is not asked to leave. Yes. So she's facing an incredible situation here. Yeah. She gets sent home in disgrace if she keeps that baby and says, I got kicked out of school. Or she can go to an abortionist, which is usually in the neighborhood of the Christian college, and have an abortion and come back and nobody says anything about it. Furthermore, the guy who got her pregnant doesn't have any consequences at all. There is something dead wrong about that, and I have fought that for years. I haven't made much progress because it is still true.
It is. We have to accept the fact that, you know, half of women who have abortions are self-proclaimed Christians. This came to our attention a couple years ago. We were working with a group in Virginia, and the 40 Days for Life team in Roanoke had called our office and said, we just stopped a girl from going and having an abortion. So we contacted the school, and we worked with the Students for Life group, and it's pretty sad. It's a sad state of affairs what's going on in a lot of the Christian schools because either they do kick out the girls or they're told they're not kicking you out, but you can't come back until after you've had the child. Mm-hmm. So you have to take a 9-month hiatus because it's not safe for you to live in the dorm rooms even if you're only a month pregnant, which from I think living in a dorm room is much safer than living on a street. But so the schools, they have differing approaches. Some schools will kick the girls out. Some schools will the girls have to face a disciplinary committee, and they get docked points or however the discipline goes. It's a really sad state. We had the same problem happen at a Christian school in Tennessee where a girl had come over. She was a foreign exchange student from China, had taken a bus for 9 hours to go into North Carolina to have the abortion, was wearing the school sweatshirt. The 40 Days for Life crew stopped her. She started crying, saying she knew what she was going to do. She knew she was going to kill her baby, but she'd get kicked out of school because she was pregnant, and therefore she'd have to go back to China where her father would kill her. And so the 40 Days for Life team actually ended up taking her under their wing, getting her enrolled in community college in North Carolina, getting her apartment so she could have her child. Her father to this day still doesn't even know she has had a baby. And this is all done through a Christian school. And it's a weird kind of situation. I've talked to some administrators in Christian schools before about what's going on. And it sadly comes down to donors and I think donor money.
It does.
They don't want a donor to be on campus who's giving to the university and seeing a pregnant woman on campus. And so we've been working. We launched this initiative called the Pregnant on Campus Initiative.
I'm sorry. Okay. I got to stop you.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
That is such a sad, sad excuse. A donor's walking around campus, sees someone who's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
How is there even a statement to be made at all?
Well, the implication is that you condone it.
Yes.
That it's not a problem on your campus.
The college I went to had married couples.
Yeah.
How do you know that girl's not married? Why would you bring it up at all? Oh, don't worry, that girl right there.
At the very bottom of this issue is the fact that the Christian college does not want to share the shame for a child born out of wedlock. And it's better for them, they think, to get rid of the girl or to put pressure on her without saying so. They don't say go get an abortion. Mm-mm. But she understands that if she comes back not pregnant, nothing's said.
Yeah, I mean, it's
wrong. I'm telling you, it's wrong.
I mean, I told one Christian school student, I said, well, why doesn't your campus just have a shuttle to Planned Parenthood then? Mm. You at least save her some gas money. I said, because that's essentially what your school is telling her, that she has to go to Planned Parenthood and abort her child. It is. It's a really sad state of affairs. We launched this Pregnant on Campus initiative this fall, and it's really about, you know, a lot of our Students for Life groups, you know, this is a new generation. Barack Obama appealed to them because he said, we're not red and blue states, we're the United States, and we're united, we're not divided. I mean, we know how that's worked out. But he really appealed to the youth of these students, of their wanting there to be everyone united and working together. And so a lot of the pro-life groups we work with, I mean, they want to bring in support services on campus. They want to be there offering, you know, scholarships to a woman who has a child and needs money for books. They want to be bringing in diaper decks, free babysitting nights. And so we have this initiative where a group can choose one of 15 different projects that to bring support for pregnant or parenting students on campus. And our coordinator will work with their group once a week to make sure the fundraising gets done, that the administration's supporting them. And we started a pledge, and we've yet to get any schools to sign it. But it's a very, I mean, I think it's a very passive pledge. It just says, one, we will not discriminate against any pregnant or parenting students on our campus. Two, we will support the efforts of the Students for Life group on campus to help these women in need. So it's not asking the university to spend any of its money or to do anything besides not discriminate against pregnant women. And so I went down to one school. I was actually at a Catholic school, and I was really hoping this school would kind of take it on and be the first, and I was really excited. And the president looked at me and was like, well, I'll sign up after other people sign it. You know, they didn't want to be the first ones to have to sign this pledge. And for me, I'm like, this pledge is like the easiest pledge you can take. It's black and white. It's not a hard thing. But it has become increasingly difficult. We were just looking last night at the number of college Christian, Protestant, Evangelical, Baptist schools versus those schools with Students for Life groups on. It's about 21% of all the Christian Evangelical college in the country don't have a Students for Life group on them. Most of the schools don't have any presence on them. And we have groups that they try to start. The administration doesn't want them to start, doesn't want to focus on abortion. And it's the perception of, we don't want to look like we're condoning premarital sex, but it's happening. And so, I mean, it's happening on your campus. Women are making mistakes on your campus, and men are making mistakes. And by not addressing the issue, you're allowing abortion to continue.
Doctor, you began this program by introducing our guest as an activist, and yet it goes way deeper than that.
It's a life mission.
It turned into her heart aching for every one of these young women. I go back to that stat at the beginning that the majority of abortions occur with young women. And I have a 25-year-old daughter. I have another son on a college campus. This is where my children live, and this is where we can save these babies and make the most benefit.
See, I knew I was going to get hit for calling her an activist.
No,
I didn't know it was going to come from Luann.
I probably have my bullhorn in my car. I got an award a few years ago, and I was struggling with it because I was like, well, obviously we haven't achieved our mission because we haven't abolished abortion in America. So, but I feel like I should put the award in my office. It's good when people come that we're not just a bunch of young college students, that we know what we're doing. But then I was looking, I was like, this does look right. So I put my bullhorn next to it. So there's an award and then my bullhorn right next to it. I feel like they complement each other well, balance each other out.
Luann and Ryan, as you know, there are times when it's just strategic to continue talking about what's going on at the end of this program, because there is a message here that needs to be heard widely, and I don't want to stop it right here, even though it's awkward to stop in the middle of this conversation. So if you don't mind, just stay where you are. And we will pick up right here and let people hear what you're about to say.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Because, Kristen, we know you have a plane to catch. So, Doctor, that's a great idea. We'll just keep recording and play the conclusion of our discussion tomorrow.
Luann, before we go, I want to talk to our young listeners. If there are any college students listening and you want to get involved with Students for Life of America and help Kristen in the fight to end abortion, don't hesitate to call us. We have all the information you need to get started.
And the phone number is 877-732-6825. Enter that in your cell phone right now, 877-732-6825. Of course, you can also visit us at drjamesdobson.org, where we'll have a link to all the information from Students for Life of America. And just very quickly before we go, while you're on that website, would you please consider donating financially to the Ministry of Family Talk? A lot of people don't realize we are completely listener-supported, and we would certainly appreciate your help during this time. And regardless of however you contact us, let us know the call letters of the radio station that you're listening to us on.
Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tune in tomorrow for the riveting conclusion of what this young activist is doing to end abortion. That's all right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.